It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
So there's more than 1,100 federal benefits for marriage. And so for those couples that are legally married living in states that recognize their marriage, the 13 now marriage equality states plus the District of Columbia... they should now have access to all the federal benefits of marriage. The question comes into play in the anti-marriage equality states like Virginia. Which of those federal benefits will these legally married couples have access to immediately, and which will take some work? The way we understand it is some federal benefits are assigned by place of celebration. So even if you live in Virginia, but you were legally married in New York, those federal benefits that are assigned by place of celebration, it is our understanding those should be available to those legally married couples, even though they live here in Virginia. However, many of those federal benefits of marriage are assigned by place of residence. And as we know, because of the marriage amendment, Marshall Newman marriage amendment, only unions between a man and a woman are recognized by the state of Virginia. So currently, all those couples that are legally married outside the state but residing here, it is going to take work to figure out how and when they get those all the rest of the benefits.
James Parrish, Executive Director of Equality Virginia, talks about the Supreme Court's decision striking down the Defense of Marriage Act, explores the federal benefits now available to gay and lesbian couples lawfully married in the dozen states which allow it, and how widespread those benefits could be in Virginia. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll find out about the health insurance marketplace, which opens on October 1st, 2013. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 209, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Starting October 1, 2013, the health insurance marketplace will open. This will provide affordable private health insurance plans that offer comprehensive coverage to help you stay well. A new tax credit will be available to help you pay your premiums for health coverage. You may qualify for this tax credit even if you earn as much as $94,000 a year for a family of four. You can apply even if you or your family already have health coverage. You could be eligible for lower cost coverage. Families that include immigrants also can apply. You can apply for your child even if you aren't eligible for coverage. Applying won't affect your immigration status or chance of becoming a permanent resident or a citizen. To apply, you will need Social Security numbers, employer and income information for everyone in your family, policy numbers for any current health insurance, and information about any job-related health insurance available to your family. Income and other information is needed to know what coverage you qualify for and if you can get any help paying for it. All information provided is private and secure, as required by law. You will be able to submit an application online, over the phone, or in person. If your income is between 100% and 400% of poverty, you may qualify for the new health premium tax credit. This reduces the total tax you owe the IRS, and if you don't owe, you can get a bigger refund. The tax credit helps cut the cost of your health insurance. To get the tax credit, you must buy your health insurance from the Health Insurance Marketplace, which will offer a wide variety of health plans with good benefits. All plans will cover prescriptions, hospital stays, doctor visits, and more. You can take the tax credit in advance when you sign up for health insurance or when you file your 2014 taxes early in 2015. To prepare the millions of uninsured Americans about to enter the health insurance marketplace, the Obama administration has launched an education effort which includes a consumer-focused website and a 24-hour-a-day consumer call center. This will help people prepare for the 6-month open enrollment from October through March and sign up for private health insurance. These new tools will help the uninsured to understand their choices and select the coverage that best suits their needs. For more information, call 800-318-2596 or visit www.healthcare.gov. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in the FAN, in the offices of Equality Virginia. We're talking with James Parrish. He is the Executive Director of Equality Virginia, and we are going to be talking about last month's Supreme Court decision that struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, and its effects nationwide, and in particular, what its effects might be here in Virginia. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here on such a timely issue. And a good starting point, it seems to me, would be a brief explanation of what was the Defense of Marriage Act.
The Defense of Marriage Act was passed in the 90s under President Clinton. What it did is it prevented the federal government from recognizing same-sex unions. That was, in a historical context, that was when some states were starting to maybe move in the direction of legalizing gay marriage. So DOMA was passed so that federal government wouldn't have to recognize these marriages, but also the states wouldn't have to recognize marriages from other states that were not between a man and a woman.
So I gather the act did at least two things. I mean, first, it affected federal law, and it said, we don't care what the states do as far as federal law is concerned. Marriage is only between a man and a woman and nothing else.
True, that. Yes.
And then the second thing it said is that, by the way, if some state out there happens to recognize gay marriage, no other state is required to do that also.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the background for the case that the Supreme Court decided last month. How did that case come before the court? What was that case all about?
Yes, there actually were several DOMA cases that are out there, and this is the one the Supreme Court chose to take up. And this is Edith Windsor. When her partner died, she was given a $300,000-plus estate tax bill. And Edith Windsor's argument was that if she had been married to a man, that there would have been no estate tax, and the only reason the federal government was charging her $300,000-plus was because she was married to a woman. And that she felt that was unconstitutional.
And it's important, what state was Edith Windsor from?
New York.
Okay. And is New York one of the states that has legalized gay marriage? If so, when? And was Ms. Windsor legally married under New York law?
She was originally legally married in Canada, but filed the suit, and while the suit was in play, New York gained legal same-sex marriage, and that they got married legally in New York.
And that was before, I guess, her partner died?
Yes, yes. They married, so they remarried in New York before her partner died. Her partner had multiple sclerosis at the end.
I see. Okay, so her partner dies. She's hit with this huge tax bill because she's considered not legally married, and that's because of DOMA. What did the Supreme Court do when faced with that?
Yes, so the ruling last week on DOMA, when the court took it up, it ruled that it was an equal protection and that right to equal protection, and that the federal government should not be denying the federal benefits of marriage to legally married couples. To do so just because they're same sex versus opposite sex was discriminatory.
And so the case obviously came up in the context of a federal tax bill. And so, at least in that context, the federal government has to treat same-sex couples the same for tax purposes as opposite-gender couples. Does the effect go beyond that?
Yeah, so there's more than 1,100 federal benefits for marriage. And so for those couples that are legally married living in states that recognize their marriage, the 13 now marriage equality states plus the District of Columbia, they should now have access to all the federal benefits of marriage. The question comes into play in the anti-marriage equality states like Virginia. Which of those federal benefits will these legally married couples have access to immediately, and which will take some work? The way we understand it is some federal benefits are assigned by place of celebration. So even if you live in Virginia, but you were legally married in New York, those federal benefits that are assigned by place of celebration, it is our understanding those should be available to those legally married couples, even though they live here in Virginia. However, many of those federal benefits of marriage are assigned by place of residence. And as we know, because of the marriage amendment, Marshall Newman marriage amendment, only unions between a man and a woman are recognized by the state of Virginia. So currently, all those couples that are legally married outside the state but residing here, it is going to take work to figure out how and when they get those all the rest of the benefits.
That's really one of the best explanations I've heard of what benefits will and won't be available here in Virginia. So can we elaborate on that just a little bit? Can you give us some examples of benefits that are available because of the place of celebration?
We have attorneys and national groups running through all that right now. Tax, as you point out, tax law can sometimes, it depends on the state, whether the state follows the person's federal tax return or not. There's some issue that maybe that will be here in Virginia. I think a clear example of the disparity, though, is from what the Pentagon has said. It recognizes for active duty members of the military their place of celebration. So all the legally married couples, you know, Hampton Roads is a huge military area. All those legally married couples down there, if they're active duty, that they'll be extended all the benefits, whether it's housing accommodation on bases, daycare, support for spouses and children, should be available to those active duty members immediately. However, the Pentagon looks at veterans based on place of residence. So all of our legally married gay and lesbian veteran military couples living in Virginia have a different path to take.
And so I was thinking one benefit that married people have is the ability, for example, to file a joint bankruptcy. Obviously, you can file an individual bankruptcy, and it would take twice as many filing fees and twice as much work to file two individual bankruptcies. So that's why married couples, man and woman, can file joint bankruptcies. I would gather from your explanation that a gay couple in Virginia under this ruling would not be allowed to file a joint bankruptcy. Would that be your understanding?
My understanding currently is that all of those benefits based on residence are going to take some work. But there are decisions and changes that the federal government can make in its how the policies are defined, but make it clear that even if you're a legally married couple living in a marriage inequality state, that they can change the way those policies are defined to make them available to those couples. And at the end of the day, that's the work that EV and other groups are going to do, is make sure that even if you're living in a marriage inequality state, if you're legally married, that you have access to all federal benefits of marriage.
But my understanding is that to the extent that there are benefits that are available currently based on place of residence, you're saying that the administration could very well change that so that the benefit is available not based on place of residence but based on place of celebration?
Right. It is my understanding that there are options available to the administration, the federal government and the administration, on how that they can define how those policies take place and when they kick in. And so it would be my assumption that it could be changing things from the benefit being available placed on celebration instead of residence.
Okay. And so I gather if a benefit were available based on place of celebration, then it wouldn't matter to the gay couple whether they married in a marriage equality state, for example, Massachusetts or Maryland, and then subsequently moved to Virginia.
Correct.
As opposed to a couple that was all the time residents of Virginia and decided, well, we want to be legally married. We're going to go to a marriage equality state like Massachusetts or Maryland or one of the other New England states, get married there, come back to Virginia, resume our residence. It wouldn't matter if it's based on place of celebration.
It is my understanding that both of those scenarios would result in gaining benefits based on place of celebration, because it's where you had your ceremony. If where your ceremony was took place is legally recognized, that's when the federal government would look at place of celebration.
So what do you anticipate efforts being made with the administration to define the range of benefits as broadly as possible?
There will be national groups are already putting on a lot of pressure for the federal government to clear this up for several reasons. One, the disparity now that we know that if it's a benefit based on place of celebration, supposedly you have access to that immediately. Place of residence, people have got to figure that out. Also, your second scenario would be a couple that lives in New York, has been legally married there. Now they have access to all 1,100 plus benefits of federal benefits of marriage, but then they move to Virginia. So then are they going to then have to give up some of those federal benefits of marriage temporarily because now their place of residence is not a marriage equality state? And then you have the folks who are just caught in the middle of it all and maybe can't afford to go and get married out of state. And so they're landlocked in Virginia in a place where they don't have access to any of the federal benefits, although they want to get married. And so all that sets up many paths, unfortunately, for litigation.
And I was thinking, do you anticipate the next legal challenge would be something like a couple from a marriage equality state that got all the benefit, the 1,100 benefits, and then for whatever reason they moved, had to move perhaps to a marriage inequality state like Virginia? They are suddenly cut off of benefits that they were getting. They file an equal protection lawsuit similar to Ms. Windsor's and say, hey, we should be treated exactly the same as if we'd stayed in New York.
Yes, I anticipate that being one path to litigation. I anticipate a couple who live in Virginia, as I said, and want to get married and can't for any reason and leave for a marriage equality state. I expect that to be a path of litigation because they're being denied rights that other lesbian and gay couples have in the nation. And then, I expect there to be litigation from couples that do live in Virginia but were legally married outside of Virginia. And until it's clear that they're going to have access to all 1,100 federal benefits of marriage, I expect you would see some litigation there.
So could you give us an example of what life is like for a gay couple living in a marriage equality state as opposed to one living in a marriage inequality state?
Yes, I think we have the perfect example is Maryland and Virginia. The difference of the Potomac River. If you live in Maryland, you cannot be fired because you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. You cannot be denied housing. You can get married. You can adopt your partner's children. So you have full financial and family and job security. With the DOMA ruling, we hope that changes the landscape some, especially when it comes to access to benefits for couples here in Virginia if they're legally married elsewhere. But, in Virginia, you can still be fired or not hired if you're gay or lesbian. You can still be denied housing. You cannot adopt your partner's children, so you don't have family security. And the so-called marriage amendment prevents any type of recognition of relationships unless you're a man and a woman. So the disparity between LGBT families and couples and individuals between those living in Northern Virginia and those living in Maryland, it couldn't be any clearer what it means to live in a marriage equality versus a marriage inequality state.
And what about Virginia just coming into the 21st century and, of course, having to repeal that constitutional amendment from about 7 years or so ago? I'm sure you saw this past Sunday the op-ed piece in the Richmond Times-Dispatch written by a fairly conservative columnist, A. Barton Hinkle, said, time for Virginia to get rid of that. What do you expect Virginia to do in terms of just legislation, or actually really constitutional amendment, getting rid of that terrible decision that the voters made so many years ago?
Yes, I was very excited to see that op-ed because we had that exact conversation in this office, and we were actually referencing it again this morning at our staff meeting. We had that exact conversation last week that it would be wonderful to see that we expect litigation to come, and I think anybody within reason expects that marriage equality is coming to Virginia, that it's just a matter of time. And we expect litigation to come, but it would be wonderful, as Mr. Hinkle pointed out, that for once Virginia to go there on its own and not to be led by a federal court to a place of civil rights.
In other words, Virginia doesn't really need another Loving versus Virginia case where the U.S. Supreme Court, I believe, unanimously struck down Virginia's ban on interracial marriages.
Right. It would be wonderful to see us take a lead from the people. To repeal that marriage amendment, though, the same language for the resolution has to pass in two consecutive General Assemblies separated by a state election. So we will start work this upcoming session in 2014, but really the resolution has to pass in 2015, there's a fall state election, and then again in 2016, and then it would go to the voters. So it would be the fall of 2016 before this could go to the voters. And that sounds like a good ways off, but when you compare it to litigation, it might be on the same time frame. I think our House of Delegates is a little more conservative than people would think would make that decision right now. But at the same time, when we're able to present to them the future, it's the writing's on the wall. Maybe this is the time that we can, you know, sit down with each of them individually and say, do you want to be part of history or do you want to be the person that was holding back history? But at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to deny that marriage equality is coming to Virginia. I was quoted, I think, in the Richmond Times-Dispatch last week, that I definitely believe when we celebrate the 10th anniversary of the repeal of DOMA that we will have marriage equality in this state.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with James Parrish. He is the executive director of Equality Virginia, and we were talking about the Supreme Court's decision from last month that struck down the Defense of Marriage Act as being unconstitutional, thereby opening up federal benefits for folks who live in marriage equality states and potentially in marriage inequality states such as Virginia. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
I'm Michelle King for the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Here's this week's legal aid success story, a true tale where justice prevails. Deborah was raising four children, ages 5, 6, 7, and 9. By herself when the unthinkable happened. Her estranged husband had never attempted to pay child support and had never gone to court to establish his parental rights. Yet, he filed for a protection order against Deborah, alleging that she had abused the children. Based on his false accusation and misstatements, the father obtained an order granting him temporary custody. Deborah contacted Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services in a panic because the children have never been without their mother for a night, and the father had a history of abusive behavior.
Despite the fact that Deborah contacted the office only one day before the hearing, an attorney from Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services was able to obtain documentary evidence from a domestic abuse shelter disproving the allegations. At once, her attorney filed a motion for immediate return of the children, attaching numerous exhibits that supported Deborah's case. The pleadings were drafted only 2 hours before the scheduled hearing and were served right before the hearing began. The court found the evidence compelling, dismissed the protection order, and returned Deborah's children to her. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Aid Success Story, a true tale where justice prevails.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. 3.5 months into sequestration, and Americans now are beginning to feel its effects. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Michael Cassidy from the Commonwealth Institute explains the toll being taken by these automatic across-the-board cuts to federal programs and why the sequester isn't even necessary anymore. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.